Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Kuf Yud Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will commence from the bottom of Kuf Tes Zayin Omid Beis. At that point in the Gemara, as we mentioned in our last shiur, the Tanaic source, a brisa that you saw that was framed off, mentioned that in Shiloh, which was the location of the Mishkan for a period of 369 years, there were only two machnos. In general, there are three machnos, three encampments, if you will, three sections that characterized the Jewish presence in the desert during the 40-year sojourn following the exodus from Egypt. Corresponding to that, there were three encampments in Yerushalayim, so to speak. There was the Machne Hashem, which was the Beis HaMikdash itself, enclosed by the Azora, the courtyard. Outside of the courtyard, until the wall delineating Har HaBayis, there was the Machne Leviya, and from the Har HaBayis to the walls of Jerusalem, there was the Machne Yisrael. So you have the Machne Yisrael, that's Yerushalayim, the Machne Leviyo, that's the Har HaBayis, and the Machne Shechino, that's within the Azora. Those are three machnos. So in the Tanaic source that we saw last time, there was mention of Shiloh having only two machnos. We must point out that this particular point will be completely re-understood, if you will, by the time we get to the end of this particular sugya on the upper part of the next Amud of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. In the meantime, the Gemara takes this at face value, that Shiloh had only two machnos. In light of that, the Gemara asks, and we will be having a bit of a back and forth discussion in this particular sugya, so in order to follow that, we have a volcano shape, and that's indicated in our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. The volcano, or trapezoid, is we call a Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the discussion. So with the narrow part facing up, those will be she'elois, questions, and with the narrow part facing down, those will be responses. So the Gemara asks, Hey, minayu lo have, of the three machnos, which one was lacking in the case of Shiloh, where the source had just mentioned previously on this very line that Shiloh had only two machnos? Omar, Rabo, mistabro de machne leviyo miho havoi. It's most likely that one of them that was not missing, so he doesn't answer the question which one was missing, but one that was not missing was the machne leviyo. It most likely was present in Shiloh. If one were to think that Machne Leviyo was not present, before we go further, we just want to point out that the Machne Leviyo was the one that he says must have been there, and therefore the Machne Yisrael must have been the one that was missing. It may be fairly obvious, but Machne Shechina, under all circumstances, was present because that's where the Mishkan itself was located. The question is, beyond the Mishkan, which one was missing? So we're at this point in the Gemara holding that it must be that the Machne Leviyo was there, and that the Machne Yisrael was the one that was missing. Because if you were to think that the Machne Leviyo was missing, the I Salkodaitoch Machne Leviyo lo havoi, the Gemara continues on the top of Kuf Yud Zayin, Nimtzu zovim utmei mesim mishtalchen chutz lamachne achas. You would then have a situation where these two different types of tomei individuals, the zav and the tomei mes, being that both of them are not allowed to be in the Machne Shechina, and the Tome Zav, which is a type of body flow that comes from the body, that creates Tuma, it would come out that they are both going to be located in the Machne Yisrael, the Zav together with the Tome Mace. We know that the Tome Mace is not allowed to be in the Machne Shechina, that we know. And we also know that the Zav is allowed to be in the Machne Yisrael. These are, needless to say, we're dealing, when we mention Machne Shechina, that's the most severe or most chomor area as far as Tuma is concerned. And when we talk about these people that are ritually impure, they must be sent out of certain regions, depending on their level of severity and the level of severity of the particular region or camp that we're talking about. So when we talk about people that are Tomei, so it's understood that they're not going to be in the Machne Shechina. Where can they be? So the Machne, the Tomei Mace, is allowed, technically speaking, to be in the Machne Levia. But if there's no Machne Levia, so where is he going to be? He's going to be in the, he would be in the Machne Yisrael. The Zav, we know, is not allowed to be in the Machne Shechina, nor is he allowed to be in general in a Machne Levia. He's sent out of two Machnos. But in this case, where you would have only a Machne Shechina and a Machne Yisrael, the Zav and the Tomei Meis would be in the same location. Now, that can't be. V'hatoyra omra v'lo yitamu es machnehem. That's the pasuk. And we learn from that pasuk, tein machne loze u'machne loze, that the Zav has to be in a machane, in a region separate from the Tomei Meis. Omar le Rava Elamai. So Rava responds to what was just said. Rava had just said that Mestabra, the Machne Levia, was there. And what was Rava's basis for that? Is if you have a Machne Levia there, then the Tomei Mace will be in the Machne Levia, and the Zav will be outside the Machne Levia, and by that we will be able to accomplish that each one is in a separate region. But Rava says, well, according to you then, Elamai, according to what you just said, Machne Yisrael lo havoi, then the Machne Yisrael is not present in Shiloh? Well, if that be the case, Nimtzu Zavin u'mitzoroin mishtalchin l'mokom echad. The Mitzora is a third type of Tomei, which we did not mention before. But if you have only a Machne Shechina and a Machne Levia, fine, the Zav is going to be outside of the Machne Levia. Now, where will our Mitzora be? The Mitzora, we know, is sent out of the Machne Yisrael, being the most severe form of Tuma, if you will. So, if he's sent out of the least of the Machnos, and in this case you have only a Machne Shechina and a Machne Levia, and he'll have to be sent out of those for sure, you'll end up with a situation where the Zav, who is sent out of the Machne Levia, and the Mitzora, who is sent out of all of the Machnos, are found in one place, are found together. The Gemara continues, V'hatoyra Omra, and the Torah said with regard to the Mitzora, Bodod Yeshev, which means Shelo Yeshev Tomei Acher Imo, that no other type of Tomei shall be with him. The Mitzora must be alone with regard to other kinds of Tuma. But if you say there's only a Machne Shechina and a Machne Levia, you're going to have the Mitzora together with the Zav. Eloli Oilom Kulu Tlosa Havu. In truth, all three divisions were present in Shiloh. Umay lohoyu eloshte machnos. So what is meant by that expression, which we saw at the bottom of Kuf Tezayin Omid Beis, and in order to find where that expression is coming from, we have a little arrow provided to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, indicating Kuf Tezayin Omid Beis. And if you look back at Kuf Tezayin Omid Beis on the left-hand side of the Gemara text, you will notice an arrow indicating Kuf Yud Zayin Omid Aleph, opposite the line where this phrase is found. So what is meant by that phrase, that in Shiloh there were only two machnos? Answer, Liklita. Liklita means the gathering in, the absorption, if you will, of a person who killed the shogeg, who committed a murder inadvertently. The Torah says that, in general, people who commit murders b'shogeg, inadvertently, they are, the Torah provides for them to run to a city of refuge. The concept of cities of refuge is seen primarily in Eretz Yisrael. After the Jewish people conquered and divided the land, a series of cities of refuge were set up. What the Gemara is saying right now is that the concept of a machne levia was not present in with regard to Shiloh. The concept of a machne levia, able to offer refuge to people that murdered b'shogeg, was not present in Shiloh. Michlal debamidbar havoi klita the havoi kolta machne levia. According to this, it sounds like that in the desert, while the Jews were traveling, the area around the Mishkan, which was occupied by the Levium, that area was capable of offering refuge to someone who had committed a murder inadvertently. Once again, the source is then telling us that Shiloh had only two machnos, namely it didn't have a machne levia with regard to an ability to offer refuge to someone who had committed a murder inadvertently. It's called Rotzeach B'Shogeg. We can infer from that that was the nature of Shiloh. But in the Midbar, where there was a Mishkan, the machne levia was able to offer refuge to someone that committed a murder inadvertently. Is that really so? So the Gemara answers, in the Ha'atanya, yes, and we have a Tanaic source that shows this very point. The source, as you can see, is in a frame, and it says, it darshins a pasuk in sections. The pasuk itself says, in Shmos Chof Aleph, it says, V'samti l'cho mokom asher yonus shoma. Now, the source explains, breaks up the pasuk, V'samti l'cho b'chayecha. That Kodesh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that in his own lifetime, even though he will not merit entering Eretz Yisrael where the cities of refuge are set up, nevertheless, the concept of a place of refuge will exist in your own lifetime, namely, while they were still in the Midbar. L'cho mokoim, which means mekoimcho, your place, the machne levia. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu that you will experience this phenomenon of place of refuge in your lifetime, in your own location. Moshe being a Levi, the place of refuge was the area that Moshe Rabbeinu had occupied, had lived in while they were in the Midbar, the Machne Levia. The Pasuk says, Asher Yonus Shama, Melamed, She Megalin, Bamidbar. This shows us that even in the Midbar, there was this concept of going into exile, namely leaving your place. Well, the Heichan Golin, in the Midbar, where would you go? The Jews were encamped in the Midbar. The entire Jewish nation was in one location. So what does it mean they would leave their place while in the Midbar? Answer, Lemachne Levia, a Jew that committed a murder inadvertently, he would go leave his immediate tribal area and go to the Machne Levia, the area that the Levium were encamped in. When we speak about a city of refuge, we didn't provide the background beforehand, but this has to do with the halacha, or the provision in the Torah that the victim of a murder that was done inadvertently, his nearest of kin, his goel hadam, as he's referred to, has a right to himself to kill the one, the murderer, the one who killed his relative. But if one goes to this place of refuge, then that prevents the Goel Hadam from carrying out his plan or from committing the murder himself. So from this discussion we see that the Machne Leviya in the Midbar offered refuge for those who may have committed a murder, Beshogeg. Mikan Omru, from this we say that Ben Levi Shaharag Gela Miplach Leplach, a Levi himself who lives in the Machne Leviya, let us say he committed a murder, Beshogeg, so he goes from Plach Leplach, from one section to another section. The im golo lesoich polchoi, polchoi koltoi. If he committed a murder in one neighborhood, within the region, let's say there's a region, and within the region there's a neighborhood, he runs from one neighborhood to the other within the same plach, that is kolto, that's effective. Well, let's go over this point again for added clarity. The line just above where it said Mikan Omru Ben Levi, Rashi says Mikan Omru Ben Levi She Hoya Dar Ba'orei Miklat, a Levi that lived in one of the cities of refuge in Eretz Yisrael, She Kol Arboim Ushmoina Ayoro Shelevim Orei Miklat Hoyu, all 48 cities that were given to the Levium, that even though the tribe of Levi did not receive a division of land in Eretz Yisrael, an entire section of Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, the tribe of Levi received 48 cities throughout Eretz Yisrael that offered this protection, this refuge phenomenon. Kinamina Maseches Makis, as the Gemara in Makis tells us, if a Levi committed an inadvertent murder, he leaves his city and goes to one of the other cities. The Dorish Beinami Hochi, regarding these other cities, it says, and we learn from that, Af HaLevim Goylim. The Levim also have this privilege or option of going to exile, namely leaving their city where they may have committed the murder, and run to another city. Let's say, though, that he committed a murder, and he didn't go from one city to another city, but he went from one neighborhood to another neighborhood in his own city. That, too, will be effective in receiving him and offering him refuge. That's what's meant by this expression, v'im gola, L'toich polcho, he ran from one neighborhood to another neighborhood within his city, polcho kolto, the city in which he committed the murder, will, in effect, be offering him refuge. He's simply in a different neighborhood within the same city. Now, what's the precedent for that? That's the case of the Machne Leviya in the Midbar. Let's say he had committed a murder in the Machne Leviya. So he goes from one section of the Machne Leviya to another section, and that will offer him protection. My Krah, what's the posuk that indicates this? Omer of Achob Rei Durav Iko, Ki Be'ir Miklato Yeshev. That's the posuk, and we darshan this, Ir Shekoltoso Kvar, the city that already had absorbed him, namely, the city in which he already was living, is capable of offering him refuge. As we said before, that if he didn't leave the city itself, but ran from one neighborhood to another, that itself will be effective. Bo'u l'Gilgal. This expression comes from the Mishnah that we saw on way back on Kuf Yud Beis, Amud Beis. The Mishnah there had spoken about the different stages of the location of the Mishkan. There was and with regard to sacrificial procedures, where and whom can do the different procedures. The differences depend on the different stages in history. So our Gemara goes on. Tana Rabbanan, the Tanaic source that we see beginning here in the frame, continues to Amud Beis. We also have a title to the Sugya, the Nosei, with a structural note that accompanies this in the outside margin. As we look ahead in the Gemara, we'll notice a series of triangles. These are Shitos Tanoim, different Tanaic opinions, behevdelim bein boma ketana leboma gedola, differences between personal altars, when of course personal altars were allowed, and that is true for different stages in Jewish history, and the boma gedola, the central altar, which was generally speaking associated with the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash. The term Boma Gedola you won't find when you're talking specifically about the Beis HaMikdash, but it's a term that's associated with the altar in the Mishkan, or the general central public altar. The source begins, Kol Nidar V'Nidev Korev B'Boma. Any type of sacrifice that can be brought voluntarily, a neder or nedava, two different types of vows or personal obligations that a person accepts on himself, that type of sacrifice, if one personally vowed to bring it, can be brought on a private boma. However, she'ein nidar v'nidev, those types of sacrifices that don't come voluntarily, for example, a sin offering, so ein korev b'boma. The private individual does not bring it on a boma. And it may be added that the private individual will not bring it, not only, according to this opinion, not only on a private altar, but it's not brought even on a public altar at the time in history when private altars were allowed. We'll also note that the public would not bring any offerings whatsoever on private altars. Mincha u'nezirus, a meal offering, and the offerings that a nazir brings at the conclusion of his Nazirite period, kraven b'boma, they are offered at a private altar, divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chachomim omrim, lo korvu liyochid ela oilois u'shlomim bilvad. The Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir and say that the private individual brings on the private altar only Ola offerings and Shlomim offerings, to the exclusion of meal offerings, the Menachos, and the Nazirus offerings. So whereas Rabbi Meir says that he classifies the Mincha and Nazirus as being voluntary type offerings, the Chachamim say, nevertheless, Menachos and Nazirus offerings are not brought on the private altar. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Shehat Sibor Vayochid Makriven Boil Moed Shebemidbar, Makriven Boil Moed Shebegilgal. Anything that the public would bring, the public and the individual would bring in the Mishkan while they were in the desert, they can bring in the Mishkan while it was located in Gilgal. Gilgal was the first stop upon entering the land of Israel, where the Mishkan was located for 14 years. It comes out, according to this, that the private person could makriv on the central boma obligatory korbanos as well. Ma bein oil moed shebemidbar lebein oil moed shebegilgal. What difference is there between these two situations, the public altar in Gilgal and the public altar, the Ohel Moed being the Mishkan, where there was a public altar while they were in the Midbar. So the Brisa answers, Ohel Moed shebe Midbar lo hayu bamos mutaros. During the time of the Mishkan in the desert, private altars were not allowed. Ohel Moed shebe Gilgal, but while they were encamped in Gilgal, hayu habamos mutaros. Private altars were allowed. U'bomosoi shebarosh gagoi lohoya makriv olel lo'olo u'shlomim bilvad. With regard to what can be brought on the private altar, the Brisa describes the boma, the private altar on a person's rooftop, indicating that we're talking about a private altar. He would offer only Ola and Shlomim korbanos. However, we want to emphasize, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the private individual, if he wanted to bring an obligatory korban, he has such an option, and that is that could be brought at the central altar. This is in contrast with the shittas we saw above of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, where private obligatory korbanos were not brought at all during this time, during the time of Heter Bomos, the time period in which private altars were allowed, and they would not allow private obligatory korbanos being brought even at the central altar. The Chachamim Oyrim Kol Shat Sivur Makriven B'Lamoyed Shebemidbar Makriven B'Lamoyed Shebegilgal. Anything that the public offered at the central altar while they were in the desert can be offered by the Tzibur, by the community, in the central Mizbech, in the Oyel Moed that was in Gilgal. Kan v'kan lo karvu liyochid ela oylo ushlama bilvad. With regard to the Midbar and Gilgal, a private individual could bring only an Ola and Shlomim. At this point, this sounds like the Chachomim that we saw earlier. There was a triangled Chachomim that seemed to say the same thing as this. The Gemara Daf Kuf Yud Ches Omen Aleph will explain the difference between this Chachomim and the Chachomim before. Rabbi Shimon Oimer. Rabbi Shimon comes to disagree with everything that we've seen till now, and he says he restricts even the public with regard to what they can bring. Up till now, the Tanoim that we saw above didn't mention any restrictions with regard to public type sacrifices that are brought on behalf of the public. Rabbi Shimon comes and qualifies that. He says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af Tzibur lo ikrivu ela psachim v'chovos hakavua lohen zman. The Tzibur, the public, would bring only the Pesach Korban and public sacrifices that were of an obligatory nature, provided they had fixed times for their being brought. This idea of a fixed time for a public sacrifice is to the exclusion of certain public obligatory sacrifices that are not calendar related, they're not fixed time related. Those would not be brought in Gilgal. The Gemara now reviews the different Tanoim that we've seen up till this point. My time of the Rabbi Meir. What's the moker for Shitas Rabbi Meir? Now, Rabbi Meir said that the private individual during the Zman of Heter Bomos could bring only voluntary type korbanos. It must be added that Rabbi Meir added to the list of voluntary type korbanos meal offerings and the Nazirus offerings. The Nazirus offerings are brought after a person who accepted on himself a voluntary state of wine abstinence and other related halachas known as Nazirus. At the conclusion of that period of time, he brings three korbanos. He brings an Ola, a Chatos, and a Shlomim. According to Rabbi Meir, those fall under the category of voluntary offerings. So the Nazirus offerings, in addition to Menachas, are brought on a Bomas Yochid, according to Rabbi Meir. What is the basis for his shita? Di Omar Kral, the pasuk says, Loi Tasun, when you get to Gilgal, you shall not do kechol asher anachnu oisim poi hayom. You will not do like we are doing today while we are in the Midbar. What is different, therefore, between that, what they were doing in the Midbar and what they were going to end up doing in Gilgal? Before we go further, let's glance at the Rashi. Kechol asher anachnu osim po hayom shonu bein tzibur bein yochid makriven chatois v'ashamos v'bechor u'maiser. We today, whether it be public or private, are offering obligatory type korbanos, the sin offerings and osham offerings, the firstborns and the tithed animals, shein choyvei shein kavu lahem zman. Those are obligatory korbanos that are not time related. The kol shekein choyvei lahem zman. And if we're offering these non-time related obligatory korbanos, certainly we are able to offer obligatory korbanos that are time related. For example, there are public offerings that are brought on holidays that are obligatory, and their time is fixed according to each holiday. Avol ma anu oisim sham? What will we be able to do over there in Gilgal? Ish kol hayoshev einov. Hayochid lo yakiv sham el lindor menudavus shiyoshev einov lindor lindov. There, they will be able to offer only voluntary type sacrifices. Ad mosai. Until when is that limitation to be? Kilo bosem v'chule ad shetavo l'shilo. This limitation of what a private individual can bring will set in or will exist until they get to Shilo. So that's what the Gemara is now offering as the source for Bimeir. Let's go back over it. Starting from the second line, Yomakro. Lo sa'asun, when you get to Gilgal, you shall not do kechol asher anachnu osim po'ayom, like we are doing here in the Midbar. Amar len Moshe l'Yisrael, ke'alisu l'aretz, when you enter the land of Israel, yasharos takrivu, yasharos is coming from the word kol ish asher, kol ha'yosher be'enov, ish kol ha'yosher be'enov, so yasharos is the word indicating voluntary offerings. Yisharos takrivu, chovos lo takrivu. However, obligatory korbanos, those the private individual will not be able to bring while in Gilgal. And when we say the private individual will not be allowed to bring obligatory korbanos while in Gilgal, that applies not only to the private altar, but to the central altar as well. Menochos and Nazirus, Yisharos Ninhu. According to Rabbi Meir, meal offerings and Nazirus offerings fall under the category of Yisharos, which means voluntary offerings. And you'll ask, well, if a person upon his Nazirus period is obligated to bring his sacrifices, why do you call them voluntary? So the answer to that is because the initial acceptance of the Nazirus was itself a voluntary act. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a new geometric form, a diamond, as far as this sugi is concerned. On the outside margin, we have a nosei, mivneh, where we have a topic, a heading, with a structural note. And you see in the outside margin a diamond featured, and we have an explanation. Shnei shlovim, shlovim are stages, two stages, bedivrei Shmuel, within Shmuel, two stages to understand Shmuel, shivo lahasbir, machlokes, rimei v'chachomim, b'inyan korbanos hanozir. He is coming to explain the machlokes between the first opinion, Rabbi Meir, and the chachomim, who is a second opinion, with regard to the korbanos of the nozir. Ma mugdar nidava uma chova. What's classified as a voluntary offering, and what's classified as an obligatory offering. So, stage one, we'll see chokin rak b'chatos v'osham shel nazirus. Their machlokas concerns only the chatos and osham. Second stage, chokin be'oilo u'shlamim avol chatos v'osham l'chuli alma choyva. Turning to the Gemara. Amar Shmuel, Machloikas, the Machloikas Rabbi Meir the Chachamim with regard to Nazirus, Bechatos ve'osham. The idea of a Korban Osham, when you're talking about a Nazir, that exists in a situation where the Nazir had become Tomei. He has to wait a period of 7 days, which is standard procedure with regard to all Tomei Meis, where a Nazir in this case had become Tomei Meis. He waits 7 days, after which he brings three Korbanos. That's And one of those three is an osham. There he brings a chatas, ola, and an osham. And then he starts counting his tara, nizirus de tara, And at the end of that, we can say, is usually understood as 30 days, and he brings the three korbanos that a Nazir Tohar brings, the Chatas, Oila, and Shlomim. So Shmuel says that the Machlokas, Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim, with regard to Naziris, revolves around the Chatas and Oshem, Aval Oilois Ushlomim, the Olos and Shlomim offering that a Nazir brings at the conclusion of his Naziris to Tara, Divrei HaKol, everyone will agree, Yeshoros, Ninu V'Karvi, everyone, meaning even the Chachomim in the Mishnah will agree that they can be brought on the private altar. Moisiv Rabba raises an objection. Chozev Eshoik, that's one example. Trumas Lachmei Toda, this is another example. Noyagin Babama Gedoyla, V'ein Noyagin Babama Ketana. The Chozev Eshoik is that which is separated from a Korban Shlomim. It's separated and given to the Kohanim. Trumas Lachmei Toda are out of 40 loaves that are brought together. The 40 loaves are brought as part of a korban toida. So the trumas lachmei toda is a separation from the toda offering, also given to the kohen. So these things, the chozev eshok from a korban shlomim, and trumas lachmei toda from a korban toda, nogim v'magdola v'nogim v'magdana. This is practiced when a korban of this nature, when a shlomim or a korban toida is brought at the central bama. And it's not practiced on private altars. The ilu hazra b'sheila shaira. There's another example of a sacrificial tithe, namely something removed and separated from a korban and given to the kohen that's not mentioned over here. Shaira means it's left out of here, out of this source. That example would have been the zroa of the korban shlomim. The zera is a part of the front leg of the shlomim korban that a nazir brings. That's called the zera b'sheila. It was eventually cooked. That is not included in this source, giving us a feeling that the shlomim of a nazir is not brought at all. This source, after all, is telling us what kind of korbanos during the heter bomos are brought and tithed, but they would exist only by the central altar, but not at a private altar. As far as the shalmei nazir are concerned, this source implies that the shalmei nazir, that specific nazir type of korban or specific shlomim specific to a nazir, is not brought at all. E amris bishlamo ba'oila ushlomim pligi. If you say that the Tanaic controversy between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim revolves around oila and shlomim, where Rabbi Meir would say that they are brought, and the Chachomim say that even an oila and shlomim, in addition to the chatas and osham, even the Olan Shlomim would not be brought at all during a time period where there was Heter Bomas. So then Ha-Mani, the source that we saw just a couple lines up, which gave us the feeling that the Shalmei Nazir, which from which the Zroa B'Shela was removed, wasn't practiced at all. This source was according to whom? Rabbonan he. That would be the Rabbonan. And not Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir would have said otherwise. He would have said that the Zroa B'Shela is Nohig. Ela E Amris, if you, however, are going to say, like Shmuel said, that Bechatos V'Osham Pligi, that the whole Machlokis Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim, what is offered during the Zman of Heter Bomos, where Shmuel would say that they argue only with regard to Achatos and Osham, but with regard to the Shalmei Nazir, everyone would hold it is brought, then Ha-Mani, the source we had just above, would be according to whom? We would not have any author for it, because the source that we had just recently would have indicated that the Shalmei Nazir are not Noheg whatsoever. Otherwise, it too would have been featured along with those other examples, the Chos of Ashok and the Trumas Lachmei Toda. Elo Yitmar Hochi Yitmar, rather, if Shmuel said anything on this topic, he said as follows. And you can see that we have a Roman numeral number 2 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, and we've squiggle-underlined this expression, Elo Yitmar Hochi Yitmar, indicating that this is a new second alternative. So, thusly, he must have said, Omar Shmuel, Machloikes Ba'il Levashlomim. The Tanaic controversy between the Chachomim and Rabbi Meir revolves around the Ola and Shlomim korbanos of a Nazir. The Chachomim would say that an Ola and Shlomim of a Nazir are not brought. Avol, Bechatas V'Asham, Divrei Kol Choyves Ninu V'Lo Karvi. But with regard to the Chatz and Asham, everyone would agree that they, even though they're part of a Nazir's offerings, they are nevertheless to be classified as Chovos, and as obligatory Korbanos, and therefore, even according to Rabbi Meir, during the time of Heter Bomos, they would not be brought. But the Olan Shlomim, according to Rabbi Meir, during the time of Heter Bomos, could be brought. The Chachamim would say, even the Olan Shlomim would not be brought, and hence, in the source that we saw above, only Chazav Ashok and Trumas Lachmei Todah were featured, and not the Zroa B'Sheva, which came from the Shlomim of a Nazir. And that's because the Shlomim of a Nazir, according to the Chachamim, was not in practice at all during the time of Heter Bomos. As we look ahead in the Gemara, we have a new geometric form, and we have on the outside margin an explanation, the Mivneh, and there's an indication that this Mivneh, this structure, continues till Kuf Yud Ches Amid Aleph. The crown shape highlights the expression Omar Mar. These are Tzitutim, quotes, Mehamokor Shishri B'Amid Aleph, quotes from the source that began on Amid Aleph and ran to the very top of this Amid. So as we go along in the Gemara, when you see this crown shape, you realize that it's a quote from that source. Omar Mar, v'chachomim oimrim kol she'atzibur makrivin b'oil v'chulei. If you want to see where this source is coming from, take advantage of the little arrow that we have to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating Omar Aleph. If you flip back to Omar Aleph, you'll notice if you skim down the page to the lower part of the page, an arrow also to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating Omid Beis. And on that line, you see the triangle, Chachomim Omrim, Kol Shatzib Makrib Oel Moed, Sheba Midbar, Makrib Oel Moed, Sheba Gilgal. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Mar, Chachomim Omrim, Kol Shatzib Makrib Oel Moed, Bechulei, etc. Mai Tamayo de Rabbonon. What is the basis for the Rabbonon that hold that a yochid does not bring obligatory korbanos, even with regard to the central mizbeach, to the boma gedola? Omar kro, ish hayoshor beinov yaseh. That's the posuk. Ish, when it comes to a private person, yashrus hu the likruv, choyves lo likruv. Private individual brings voluntary offerings. A private individual does not bring obligatory offerings. The tzibur, when it comes to the public, afilu chovos nami likruv. They are entitled to offer chovos as well. They do bring their obligatory sacrifices. Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Loch, Rabbi Yehuda said that a yochid, a private person, does bring obligatory korbanos at a central altar. Rabbi Yehuda will tell you, ki ksiv hayoshar, the term yoshar, when it's used, abi einov hu dichtiv. That means, einov means, is a reference to the private altar. That with regard to a private altar, Rabbi Yehuda concedes, there he brings only voluntary korbanos and not obligatory ones. However, at a central altar, according to Yehuda, in contrast with the Chachamim, he is able to bring his private obligatory korbanos. And that's what he goes on to say now. Avol bebama gedola, Rabbi Yehuda will tell you, afilu chovos nami likruv. Even private obligatory korbanos can be brought at the central mizbeach. Question: Ela ha'ksiv ish? But does the pasuk not say that? Lav lemeimra, is that not suggesting to ish yisharos likruv ha chovos lo likruv, that a private person brings only yashrus, voluntary offerings, and he does not bring obligatory ones even at the central mizbeach? So what does Rabbi Yehuda do with the expression ish, which seemed to emphasize the private person? He brings only voluntary offerings under all circumstances. Of course, we're talking about the time of Heter Bomas. So the Gemara answers, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, ki ksiv ish, when the Torah uses the word ish, lahachshir es hazar. The word ish is coming for a totally different purpose. It's not a limitation expression, but rather it's coming to allow a non-kohen to do the sacrificial activity at private altars. The Gemara asks, but that particular point, zar, mivizor kohen es adam al mizbeach Hashem nafko. The concept of a non-kohen being able to function at a private altar is learned from this pasuk, which says that when you're dealing with the Mizbeach Hashem, the central altar, there a kohen is necessary. But if it's not a Mizbeach Hashem, if it's a private altar, a zar, a non-kohen, is also acceptable. So what do I need the ish pasuk for? Answer, mahu detema. If I didn't have the ish pasuk to machshir azar, I would have thought liboy kiddush b'choros kamei kara. I would have thought that at a private altar, true, you don't need a kohen, but you need to have a firstborn. The firstborn males were, in fact, as we've learned in this masechta, they were the original kohanim, so to speak. They were the original ones assigned to be in charge of the sacrificial procedures. So that's what I would have thought had I not had the word ish. I would have thought that during the zman of Heter Bamos, it's not just anyone is able to do the avoda, but you'd have to have the sanctification of Bechoros for that. Komash malon, that's what the word ish comes to expand and say, that since you're at a private altar, anyone is acceptable for doing the sacrificial procedure. The Gemara now asks a question that we raised earlier in when we were learning the source on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Chachomim Hainu Tanakama. The Shitas Chachomim, the second Chachomim in that source, seems to say the same thing as the original Chachomim in the source, the Chachomim that were Cholek on Rabbi Meir. Namely, that according to both of them, a yochid, a private individual, has a right to bring only oilois and shlomim. The public, though, had a right to bring obligatory sacrifices. So are they not saying the same thing, the chachomim, the two chachomims? Omar Rav Papa, korvu nesachim bamidbar iko binayo. The issue of korvu nesachim bamidbar, they have as a point of difference between them. According to the Tanakhama, we've written on the inside margin, the nesachim, the accompanying offerings, the sometimes called the drink offerings or wine that was brought along with many sacrifices, that wine offering did not take place in the Midbar. Therefore, upon entrance to the land of Israel, where the Torah in Parshas Nesachim mentions that nesachim will be noeg upon entrance to Israel, that's to tell them that at the central altar, they will now, for the first time, be bringing wine offerings. However, not at private altars. according to the Chachamim, they hold that Nesachim were offered in the Midbar, that the wine offerings took place in the Mishkan in the Midbar. Therefore, upon entrance to the land, if the Torah is revealing that something new about the wine offerings, the new there would include the need for wine offerings at a private altar. So that is going to be the point of difference between them. We may point out that depending on what your opinion is with regard to what took place in the Midbar with regard to the wine offerings, that will have direct ramifications on what would take place in Eretz Yisrael. Namely, that upon entering Eretz Yisrael, there would be some type of new experience that was not present in the Midbar. So if you say that in the Midbar they did offer drink offerings, Yayin Nesachim, then in Eretz Yisrael, the wine offerings would be brought at a private altar. However, if you hold that in the Midbar, even in the central Mizbeach, Nesachim were not brought, then upon Eretz Yisrael, the new aspect would be to offer the Nesachim at the public altar, which was not done prior to that, but not at private altars. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.